From the Environment Report at Michigan Radio, I'm Lester Graham. The state of Michigan is finding industrial chemicals known as PFAS in the tissue of fish. So it's been issuing don't eat the fish advisories along lakes, rivers, and streams. But there are still concerns about whether state officials are doing as much as they should. First, we have to start this story with a little
science.
The reason PFAS chemicals in fish is such a concern is because of something called bioaccumulation. If there's a toxic substance in the river, all the organisms in the water get a bit of it. So if a small fish, let's say, eats insect larvae, it's taking in all the toxic material in the larvae. Then a bigger fish eats that fish. And it gets all the toxic substances from all the larvae the little fish ever ate. As that bigger fish eats more little fish, the toxic chemicals build up in that big fish. You catch the fish, you eat it, you get more concentrated PFAS chemicals in you. The more contaminated fish you eat, the more PFAS in your body. The state's top medical executive, Dr. Eden Wells, says it's a good idea to check on whether the fish you're catching and eating are safe.
Just go to Michigan Eat Safe Fish, and it will actually outline the water bodies that you're interested in fishing in and tell you how much fish you can eat per month or how many servings per month or if you're not to eat fish out of certain areas that you're fishing in.
As more samples from fish show PFAS contamination, Wells says the state of Michigan issues don't eat the fish advisories for parts or all of a river. That's what happened to the Huron River recently. At first, just parts of the river were affected. Laura Rubin with the Huron River Watershed Council says then don't eat the fish warnings were extended.
So that it now encompasses the entire river from its headwaters down to Lake Erie. And we recommend, too, that you don't eat fish even in some of the tributaries.
We were chatting next to the Huron River as it flowed through Ann Arbor. We could see families playing in the water. The science is still not clear about how well skin acts as a barrier to PFAS chemicals, but skin contact is believed to be a lower risk.
We are still encouraging people to swim and kayak and get in the water. Don't eat the fish. Don't inhale or eat the foam. You know, we know those kinds of things are dangerous.
That foam she mentions is PFAS chemicals frothed by churning water. Across the state in Rockford, the Rogue River flows past the site of a now-demolished Wolverine shoe tannery. It used a waterproofing compound called Scotchgard. It contained a PFAS chemical. Now it's in the river. I chatted with people enjoying the trails and recreational areas around a dam on the river. A few visitors there knew about the PFAS contamination. Most didn't. I didn't see any "do not eat the fish" signs. Trevor Griffey was fishing off the dam. He knows about the PFAS pollution, but he's not worried.
I've been eating the fish for 30 years out of here. I ain't gonna change now. I'm still alive.
That's the kind of statement I've heard from anglers for years across the Great Lakes region about other contaminants in fish, such as dioxins, PCBs, and mercury. Up in Oscoda Township, there's greater concern. There are signs along the Ossabaw River warning against eating the fish. Oscoda is a resort area. Fishing is a big deal. Township Clerk John Nordine says they want the state to keep them better informed about whether the fish are safe to eat.
It's a major concern by citizens asking for quicker or more frequent sampling and to have the data returned to us quicker. There's definitely a lot of concern because it's not just, you know, for leisure, but it's economic as well for us.
There's a problem with getting information quicker. The state has a backlog of fish to test because so many samples are being taken. The fish that led to the Huron River Do Not Eat the Fish Advisory was caught almost a year and a half ago. Laura Rubin with the Huron River Watershed Council says what's happening to Michigan's water is discouraging.
Nobody takes responsibility. You know, we need to have our US EPA and our state of Michigan government stand up and say, we protect human health. Why are we introducing things into our environment when we don't know the effects?
Because these PFAS chemicals are persistent, forever chemicals, it'll be a long time before contaminated water and fish in Michigan are safe again. With the Environment Report, I'm Lester Graham, Michigan Radio News.
Marking 100 years since elk were brought back to Michigan. This is the Environment Report. I'm Rebecca Williams. The elk is an important Michigan symbol. It's even on our state flag. But have you ever seen an elk in the wild in Michigan? Lester Graham took a trip up north to see wild elk, and he has this report.
Michigan elk were wiped out in the 19th century. Clear-cutting the forests removed their habitat. Market hunting, that is, hunting to sell the meat to restaurants, butchers, and homes, did the rest.
Habitat changed quickly. Animals were harvested without any limit because back at that time, there were no protections on any type of wildlife.
That's Katie Keene with the Department of Natural Resources. Eventually, some conservationists got together to try to restore the elk to Michigan.
100 years ago, in 1918, 7 elk were brought from the western United States to Michigan.
Today, there are nearly 1,200 elk in and around Pigeon River Country State Forest near Gaylord. I grabbed a recorder and a camera to go search for elk myself. I had 2 days. On the first morning, I ran into Clem Kasuba. He's an elk hunting guide. He said outside of dawn and dusk, it's really hard to find them.
With the heat, they're back in by the swamps or around lakes or in the shade up in the hills.
He told me a place where I'd have a better chance of seeing elk at those times than at a roadside observation point. So I hiked into the forest to this little rise that overlooked 2 large clearings and set up my equipment under an old maple tree. I waited and waited.
Okay, it's getting dark here. No elk today. Day one.
I got to thinking about something Clem Kasuba had told me. I asked him if he was a guide only or did he hunt.
Oh, I'm a hunter, but I've never hunted elk. I never got a permit yet.
How many years have you been trying to get a permit?
35 years. Yep.
There are nearly 50,000 applications for an elk permit each year. Only Michigan hunters can apply. A lottery is held for 200 permits. Katie Keene says that's more permits than traditional because at a population of 1,200, the elk are beyond the target of 500 to 900 animals.
When a population gets too high and is not managed, there can be a lot of bad feelings created.
You know what a deer can do to a garden, right? Well, think of an animal 2 to 4 times bigger than a deer foraging. Then remember, elk gather in herds. That can cause a lot of damage to crops. Day two, I met 2 couples at the observation site by the road. Ed Curran asked what I was up to, and I noticed he had some cameras along with long lenses in the front seat of the Land Cruiser. For them, watching elk is a hobby.
About 3 weeks ago, we saw 14 large bulls in that viewing area.
So I'm not wasting my time completely.
No, they're around here. They got to be around here somewhere.
I was not having any luck.
Here at dawn, no elk. Search the woods, no elk. Here at dusk, no elk. That's the end of day 2. I was literally packing up to go, and I noticed something out of the corner of my eye, and it's a juvenile elk. Not very big at all. And it's just slowly getting closer and closer.
I watched as that elk grazed along the edge of the forest for maybe 10 minutes altogether. He never got closer than about 150 yards, but still, it was pretty rewarding. I wish he would have gotten closer, but it was just nice to finally see one. I'm Lester Graham.
If you want to see elk, viewing at the Pigeon River Country State Forest gets better during September and October. That's the Environment Report. I'm Rebecca Williams.
From Michigan Radio, I'm Lester Graham. There was a showdown of sorts at this week's Democratic Endorsement Convention. Young progressive activists are demanding more say in the party that's been controlled to a great degree by labor unions. The key race of the convention was symbolic of the divide. Pat Miles was the Democratic Party leadership's choice to be the nominee for Attorney General. He had the backing of the big unions.
I am proud to have the support of labor. I'm proud to have the endorsement of the UAW, of the IBEW. Thank you, UAW.
His chief opponent in the race was Dana Nessel. She did get the backing of the teachers' union, the MEA, but she was counting on the support of progressives in the party.
And let's get on the floor and let's win this thing. Let's be great!
Now, there have always been factions in the Democratic Party, as there are in most political parties. But there's a shift happening as younger people, the millennials, push for change and labor is somewhat resistant. Kelly Collison is the chair of the party's Progressive Caucus.
It's mostly more to do with the leadership in the UAW. that we've butted heads with as the, you know, new progressives that have come in, mostly from the Bernie wave, and then, you know, the Trump presidency got a lot of people activated as well. But I think that we're getting to a point where we're starting to see more alliances between people all across the board, I think.
But party activists say the young progressives want a larger role in the party now. In online discussions, some union members have expressed frustration with young people demanding change in the party. They say those young activists don't understand how the system works. Dennis Williams is the president of the United Auto Workers. When asked whether the conflict was more about the unions holding on to party leadership, he disagreed.
It's not about power to me. The UAW knows that we have some influence, right? But it's the overall picture that matters. You know, are they active? Are they going to stay active? Are they going to be at least engaged in the process to the point that some good comes out of it? I have no problem with it. I think it's great.
A union stronghold in the state is in the Flint area. The congressman there, Dan Kildee, says Democrats need to acknowledge change is coming.
It's not easy. There'll be some hurt feelings. There'll maybe will be some anger, depending on how this turns out. But I think there's so much at stake that people will come together. This party will come together.
And he says the young progressives are making it clear they're in the party to stay.
They're not quitting. This is not just a fleeting moment for them. There's a level of engagement that I think is going to last for a long time. That's a good thing for us.
One point the progressives stressed is that they are pro-union. The union members say they're also progressive. The two sides agree on a lot, but it comes down to the struggle for influence in the party. At the end of the convention, the vote for attorney general showed the progressive wing of the party does have some clout.
I want to thank first all of my supporters, all the unions that backed me, but I want to congratulate Dana Nessel on her victory.
The winner of the Democratic endorsement for attorney general, Nessel, played down the labor and progressive divide. She says beyond that, she thinks the issues important to her are not even Democrat versus Republican.
Consumer protection, or protecting seniors, or protecting workers, or making certain that people have fresh water to drink and air to breathe. I don't know why any of that has to be partisan.
The next question is who the young progressives decide to back in the race for governor. The Democratic candidates know they can no longer dismiss them, but at the same time, they cannot ignore labor either. I'm Lester Graham, Michigan Radio News.